Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Let's Talk Surgery podcast for the Royal College of Surgeons of Edinburgh. I'm your host, as always, Ceci Hotonu, Paediatric Surgery Registrar here in Scotland. And today we're minus Greg because he's dealing with a trauma call, but we are thinking of him. Now, today we are continuing in the fantastic Faculty of Surgical Trainers series, but we are once again going international, this time to Canada. And I'm absolutely delighted to be joined today by Dr. Ken Harris, who is a vascular surgeon there. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Fantastic. Now, this is really a series focusing on training, and I'm going to take you through some questions to hopefully learn a little bit more about you outside your professional life. But what we like to do, first of all, is get to know our guests a bit better. So starting with an open question, who is Ken Harris?
That should be a simple question, but probably one of the hardest questions of all to answer.
Yes.
So I'm a retired vascular surgeon who spent most of his life in London, Ontario, practicing there. Then I moved about 12 years ago to the city of Ottawa, which is Canada's national capital, where I took on the role Director of the Office of Specialty Education at the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada. Now, the Royal College of Canada actually oversees the training of all specialists in 68 different specialties. So I've gone from a very focused vascular surgeon to perhaps being much more of a generalist in the last 12 years. It's been a full-time job, so I think your audience deserves to know that I've retired from clinical practice for some time, yet do maintain an interest in all things vascular. I'm happily married and overly proud father, emergency manager in the city of Calgary, and I have no grandchildren, but that's okay.
Well, that sounds like a fantastic summary of both your personal and your professional life. Now, we've had recently a series with some vascular surgeons here in the college, and our favorite question to ask them is, what is your favorite vein in the body? Let's see if you pick the same one as all the other five we've asked so far.
Does it have the initials LSV?
No, it doesn't.
The long saphenous vein?
It actually does. Actually, thinking about it, LSV, long saphenous vein, of course, that makes sense. But no, all of you have the same favorite vein. I feel like all the other veins are getting a bit of a raw deal in this. Nobody has picked anything else. Why do you like it so much? It's a real mystery to me. I guess it's very useful, isn't it?
It's tremendously long for gaining venous access, for providing bypass graft material, or for ablating. Becomes varicose.
Of course.
And multiple uses.
It does. So I see the reasoning behind it, but I'm convinced that there must be some sort of manual that they give all vascular surgeons all over the world. And on the top of it, it says long saphenous vein. Anyway, I digress. So we'll just move next into sort of the usual questions we ask during these series. And we'll just kind of delve a little bit into training, what you like about it and the like. So the very first question is, who was your best trainer and why?
Okay. You may not thank me for this, but I would think that my best trainer at my advanced age is experience. Perhaps not what you were looking for. But I will actually put some names onto individuals who strongly influenced me during training at not sure if these names will be familiar to your audience or not, but I think one of the ones that had the biggest impact on me was a general surgeon named John Duck, who's a professor and chair of surgery at the University of Western Ontario. Mm-hmm. He was also the one that recruited me back. The other one who had a great influence on me was I was doing my vascular surgery training at the University of Toronto. Wayne Johnson was his name. I think he helped me finish to become an academic surgeon, taking a surgeon, an eager surgeon, ready to get his hands dirty, to the point where I could see other things in life other than just the operating, the research, the leadership, et cetera.
And that's very important because research and innovation is at the very heart of surgical practice. So it's fantastic that you had mentors that could develop that interest in you. That's amazing. Now, I'm sure in your career, you must have been involved in training other surgeons yourself. What do you enjoy most about training?
I think it's the constant learning. I did have an academic career, so all of my clinical life was spent with residents or registrars and medical students. They kept me young. They kept me sharp. They stimulated to learn, but they also stimulated me to be able to reframe, be able to reteach, be able to look at different ways of accommodating their learning needs, which again helped me solidify in my mind the principles, but also the practice of vascular surgery. I think it really was a great learning experience. I would think I probably learned as much from the individuals I worked with during their training than they learned from me. And as I said, that sort of started the pathway to continuous learning throughout my career.
I think in surgery, the beauty of it is every day is a school day. And one thing I particularly love about pediatric surgery is how many congenital conditions we come across and different variations of. And it's beautiful to be able to continue learning, especially through your juniors. I mean, I'm still a bit of a baby registrar at the start of my career, but I have been involved in little bits of teaching and training. And it's surprising how much you can learn if you're just open to it. So the next question, I don't know what you're like when you were operating in theatre, whether you used to play music or not, but if you did play music, what sort of music did you play?
I didn't play music, and I'll tell you why shortly. But what I would play if I was playing music would be classical music, probably Baroque, or some of the romantic composers. So I'm sure you can anticipate where I'm going with the reason why we didn't play music in my operating room. So I couldn't stand the fighting from everyone who'd rather listen to country and Western music.
That's hilarious. I myself, I'm a big lover of classical music. I play the piano, and Chopin is a favorite of myself, and a bit, you know, cliche. I love a bit of Beethoven as well. It just takes you, it's transcendent. I think I would probably be one of the people who would support your musical choices, and personally do not like country and Western. Apologies to anyone listening. I just don't get it.
That's too bad, Ceci, because you and I are operating at the different ends of the age spectrum.
Yes, that is very true. I think I have very little encounters with vascular surgery in children. I think the only things that we do with regularity is vascular access for oncological purposes. And I must admit, I do love a long saphenous vein in babies because you can stick a cannula in there if you're ever in trouble. So it's a good vein. I've got to admit.
We could turn you into a vascular surgeon, yeah.
Maybe, but the babies are just too cute. So, next question. You are stranded on a desert island and you've been told you can only take one surgical instrument. What is that favorite surgical instrument that you cannot live without?
As much as I love my aortic clamps, the surgical instrument I use the most, my go-to tool, was usually a baiter, a small right-angled clamp that I use for dissecting, circling vessels, and for a whole variety of things. So I think that would be my favorite tool when I was in practice.
It's incredibly useful. I was just thinking about this the other day because we do a lot of oncological resections and I love that sort of surgery. And a good right angle, you can't beat it for getting around things. So excellent instrument.
Getting around things, but also staying out of things.
Exactly. It's just so useful. Fantastic bit of kit. So I'm going to give you the question. Originally was designed to ask you just one book that you've enjoyed the most, but I'm going to give you, like with other guests, the opportunity to nominate two books, one medical and one non-medical, that you absolutely love.
Okay. Well, you are constraining me because I have a list of four books here.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's have them.
Well, let me start by answering your question, and you can tell me if you want more. The medical book I really enjoy is a book by Harold Ellis called Famous Operations.
Okay.
It's a book of history, which is currently out of print, so any of your listeners will need to find a library to get it. But he classifies operations as being famous because they were the first time things were done, or they were done upon famous people. So it's a fascinating short read, which I really enjoyed. It was much more accessible than some of the larger volumes of the history of surgery. As far as the non-medical book, book I used to give to all of the new recruits in our department was a book entitled Getting to Yes by Uri and Fisher from the Harvard Collaboration Project. And always found that was a good way to help them as they started their surgical career into an open mindset, a good way forward to interacting with their peers, the hierarchy, as well as with their consultants.
Fantastic. Those are two, they sound like two absolutely amazing books, but now you've teased me with four books. You've got to tell me what the other two are now.
Okay. The one book is Collaborating with the Enemy by Adam Kahane. And it's a book about difficult negotiations. As past chair of the Department of Surgery, as past postgraduate dean, I found that came in very helpful. And the other book I think is really top of mind as I'm transitioning out of surgical practice and looking at perhaps adopting more of a coaching model for what it might be worth to department members, et cetera. And that's a book called Coaching for Performance by Sir John Whitmore, which goes through the principles of coaching and of really, I think, learning and teaching.
Those sound absolutely fantastic. And I'm so pleased that you still have that heart for giving some knowledge and for coaching and for just helping the younger generations grow. That's absolutely fantastic. So you have had a very, very busy clinical life, it seems, and even after that, still doing work with the college. How did you keep a good work-life balance in the midst of all that?
I think it was more work-life integration than work-life balance. Okay. I have a very understanding wife and a child who's no longer a child, who were very understanding, could understand why dad and hubby weren't available from time to time, but also when we were available, made the dedicated effort to spend time together. We also pursued various passions that were active. So, of course, in Canada, snow skiing is one of the things you do. What a wonderful way to have a conversation with the family. Things that might not come up in a formal living, things where we could be active together and share experiences. So we enjoyed our adventures, accepting that I couldn't always be available for those adventures. But also, I think our mutual joy of learning has led us to explore different things. And my family's not beyond trying to one-up me. So that's good.
It sounds like you have such fantastic family support, and being married to a non-surgeon myself, I can understand how difficult it sometimes can be to balance family life and the work and the job and the passion. So I guess to anyone listening out there who is a non-surgeon, married to a surgeon. We are rooting for you and thank you for everything you do and for understanding. Now, last but not least, in your career, what is the best bit of advice you've ever received or given, a so-called pearl of wisdom that you can leave our listeners with?
So if I had to summarize it in a single sentence, perhaps with a comma or semicolon in the middle of it, is be open-minded and always be eager to learn.
Oh, fantastic. I think that's one of the best ones we've had. Be open-minded, be eager to learn. That is just the summary of surgical practice, I think. Now, Ken, thank you so very much for joining us today. I've had such a fun time with you, and I look forward to speaking to you again in future, I hope soon. And I hope I get to visit Canada one day as well. I've never been skiing before. It looks fun. I'm frightened I might fall over, but I'm sure you'll be able to show me so many tips and tricks if ever I made it to Canada across the pond.
Well, it's so cold when you're skiing that you have so many clothes on, it doesn't hurt when you fall over. So that's a
fantastic,
that's a good thing. And if you are ever in this neck of the woods, please do look me up. It's been a real privilege to be able to speak with you, meet you. And I look forward to meeting you sometime in the near future, perhaps at the ICASET meeting 2022.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, likewise. Now, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I certainly did. Until next time, stay safe and please be kind to each other. Bye, everyone.